TV. I don't like sports, they're not for me. I don't like to party, I don't like to sleep. Having a good time is not my cup of tea. No, I don't care for much at all, but there is one thing that I'm all for.
G'day and welcome to the Drunken Beersman podcast. I'm your host, Uncle Dan, and this week we are going to be looking at a bit of beers news. We're going to be looking at a bit of beers news. We've got a couple of fucking shout-outs. Ah, it's going to be a great fucking show. I'm feeling really pumped. I'm feeling really energized. I released my new podcast this week. Actually, if you're interested in books or comic books or any sort of form of the written word, you should go check it out. It's called The Drunken Book Nerd, and hopefully by the time of this release, it'll be all approved by iTunes. It'll be sitting right there to go find out. It'll be turning up on the website. That's thedrunkenbeersman.com sometime in the next, you know, week or two. Yeah. I like books. I really like books. I like books almost as much as I like beards, and fuck it. It's something I really, really like to do, and fuck me, and I tell you what, you get so pumped and just a little bit nervous, but it's a good nervous when you, you're going to create something new, man. It's been too long. I absolutely fucking love it. So, little plug over. Let's get into it. One of the very first stories we here at the Drunken Beersman covered a couple years back now on the very first episode was this stupid, dangerous fucking thing called necking. For the Iron Liver Challenge is what they've called it. It's the same basic fucking thing. Basically, it's where these retards will fucking down a whole bottle of spirits and try and get it down in under a minute, and then, you know, try not to die. Which at the time we covered the story, I do believe a school kid had actually fucking died. A 15 or 16 year old had died doing it, down a bottle of gin or something. You know, just in a tragic fucking waste of a life. Although, mind you, if you think that's sort of fucking cool, you got to expect something stupid to fucking happen. So, British vlogger Scat Dagger posted some footage on his YouTube channel this past week, or past 2 weeks, I should say, of him necking a liter of vodka in less than a minute as part of this stupid thing that I can't believe is still fucking going on. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with people? So, real name's Andy Doherty, who goes by the nickname, of course, Scat Dagger, coined the term Iron Liver Challenge for the most dangerous dare that sees participants sink 40 units of alcohol in 60 seconds. Now, the 29-year-old father from Folkestone in Kent has received thousands of views on the YouTube and is now urging viewers to recommend other tipples for him to chug. Not that dissimilar from Shoe Nice a few years ago before he, you know, woke up doing fuck himself and stopped doing the booze chug challenges and was just doing shit like, you know, other fucking brilliant ideas like glue or fucking hot sauce. Now, he's said, listen, I've downed a, you know, 700ml bottle of vodka before, so I knew a liter wouldn't be that much of an issue. All my friends call me the land pirate because of my tattoos and my love of rum. Now, tattoos, mate, you've got two fucking black goddamn arms. Go fuck yourself, dickhead. He reckons his videos are funny. He goes, I make funny videos every now and then, and they always seem to get a good response on Facebook, so I set up a YouTube channel for myself and friends to start making various videos. He assures us that he wasn't sick after the vodka, and now he's been asked to down a litre of mouthwash, a litre of olive oil, eat a stick of butter, or eat silly amounts of donuts. He's not sure what he's going to do, probably the litre of mouthwash, because, you know, if you're going to be a fucktard, you may as well go the whole way. Now, once again, this has just pushed this stupid fucking process back up to the fore with, very, you know, numerous other fucking people now deciding to take on the deadly dare. But of course, the experts have come up and, you know, duh, oh, it could easily end tragically. So, former British Home Office scientist and alcohol expert Dr. John Mundy said that the Iron Liver Challenge could potentially kill, as we have seen it happen, if the alcohol levels in the body were raised high enough. Now, Dr. Mundy has said, just give me a second, Dr. Mundy has said that because the liter is being drunk so quickly, the alcohol levels will rise continuously for about 2 hours. It's a very dangerous thing to do because you have absolutely no control over your alcohol levels. If his levels reached between 400 and 450 milligrams of alcohol in his body, then he could die. So on the old breathalyzer, that's 0.4 to 0.45. The alcohol levels slowly go up and up and up and up, and once he's done it, he's got absolutely no fucking control over what happens. What he's doing is lethal. He could vomit and die on his vomit if he passes out. And 450 milligrams, most people will die. The bottom line is, you shouldn't fucking do it. Now, like I said, we here at the Drunken Beers, and we enjoy a drink. In fact, we've built a whole podcast around, you know, the drinking culture as well as the bearding culture. We've got many, many booze reviews on the website, something I want to, you know, once again, re-fucking get back into this year. But one thing we have made perfectly clear, and I'll just reiterate this statement right now, we here at the Drunken Beersman promote only responsible drinking. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having, you know, a bit of a tipple of your favorite beverage, but for fuck's sake, if you're going to drink like a dickhead, don't fucking drink. You know what I mean? Some people could make the argument for the cause of, you know, Darwinism at fucking work. But, I mean, we're not like that. We don't want to see people get hurt, you know what I mean? Drinking and the culture around drinking can be fun as long as you're not doing it to excess. Binge drinking is fucking bad for you. This necking thing is just flat out fucking stupid. What is the point in doing something that, you know you've got a high probability of fucking dying from? And if you do feel that you are beginning to get a problem with drinking, I urge you to please go get help. There doesn't have to be a 12-step program. You don't have to go through all the religious bullshit. There are many different things available to you to help you with the problem. So I urge you to please go get help if you feel you need it. If you can enjoy drinking responsibly, if you can enjoy having that moderate drink, fucking there's no harm in that. But these fucking idiots who go around fucking necking fucking full bottles of spirits or fucking binge drink until they throw up and black out, you know, all this sort of shit, buddy, you need to get your fucking head examined, all right? Sorry, ran over. I couldn't believe it when this came up this week. I thought this shit was well and truly done with. I mean, for fuck's sake. So, moving right along to some happier fucking news. An Irish vodka and an Irish gin has been named the best in the world. Now, Untamed Irish Vodka and Exiles Irish Gin has been named best in the world at the World Vodka Awards of 2016 and of the World Gin Awards of 2016. The multi-award winning Avalon Group is celebrating victories at the 2016 Vodka Awards and 2016 Gin Awards. Untamed Irish Vodka has been named the world's best pure neutral vodka, as well as the best Irish pure neutral vodka in the world. The Exiles Irish Gin has won the best Irish contemporary style gin, and both spirits were launched by the Avalon Group in 2014. Both of these awards competitions are part of the overall World Drinks Awards program, selected by an international panel of experts. After three rounds of judging, the awards were presented by founder and editor of the Drinks Report, Felicity Murray. Commenting on the awards, Andre Levy, who's chairman of the Protégé International, said the exclusive sales and marketing agency for the Avalon Group has said that we work hard to produce the very best for our customers who have come to expect a distinctive level of excellence. These awards serve to recognise not only these efforts, but also to showcase authentic Irish ingredients and themes among the best in the world. This means that Avalon has won the best in class for every category it markets its brands in: Irish whiskey, rum, vodka, gin. This is a very rare accomplishment and highlights Protégé International skills in brand creation and in producing premium spirits. Now, Untamed Irish Vodka is the first and only super premium vodka produced in Ireland. That is double distilled first from Irish apples and grain, from the second distillation, achieving optimal purity and distinctly smooth taste. The bespoke Untamed Irish Vodka bottle features spectacular chrome wings, symbolic of the unbroken Irish spirit and its goal for freedom for everybody. The Exiles Irish Gin is produced using botanicals that grow in the wild across Ireland and is the only gin in the world that contains shamrock and is patented. This gin is distilled five times for ultimate purity, resulting in a smooth and floral gin infused with Irish ingredients. We will fucking see about that, because I'm going to track myself down a bottle. If you happen to have a bottle and you want to send it to me, email me, mailbag@thedrunkenbeersman.com. If not, I'll just go fucking buy it. Now, this seems to be the night for ranting about booze, because I seen this story and I fucking spat chips. Like, literally, I was eating some hot chips and I spat the fucking shit all over the screen. Now, Stolichnaya plans to start selling gluten-free vodka. Yeah, that's right, you heard me. Gluten-free vodka. That's gluten-free vodka. Now, Okay, so here's the story, all right? So Stoli Gluten-Free is hitting the market this month thanks to a growing interest in gluten-free diets. The new vodka makes Stoli Group the first large established and international vodka brand to label itself gluten-free, as reported by Reuters. The vodka will be made from 88% corn and 12% buckwheat. Wheat, but gluten-free. Wheat, but gluten-free. Okay, fuck it. pardon me. One in five consumers is trying to include more gluten-free options in their diet, according to Stoli Group USA CEO Patrick Piana. Sorry if I fucked your name up, bud. Like you listen to this. More than one in four of these consumers are not doing so due to the autoimmune system celiac disease, because they feel, you know, better doing it. I'll have my bread gluten-free, thank you. While Stoli is the first certified gluten-free brand, vodka in general tends not to fucking have gluten. The National Institutes of Health even say that distilled alcoholic beverages are safe to drink if you're gluten-free because the fucking act of distilling alcohol removes the gluten. However, if you're super sensitive to gluten cross-contamination, some sources, you know, recommend that avoiding alcohol that uses gluten grains. For these sensitive souls slash fucktards, sensitive souls, Stoli gluten-free might be a great addition to cocktail hour, although not essential for most of the 25% of consumers looking to cut down on gluten. While gluten-free liquor is still a niche market, demand for gluten-free foods reached $3.3 billion worldwide in 2015, according to Euromonitor International. Now, what the fuck, man? Gluten-free vodka. Fucking gluten-free vodka. Now, okay, so there are some grain vodkas out there, and I mean, they are very popular vodkas. They tend to be a better brand of vodka. It's a pure grain vodka. And yes, I can see how some sensitive souls may be a little bit concerned about gluten making it through, you know, the highly fucking involved distillation process, you know, what with all the heating and the fucking distillation and the purification. This is fucking hipsterism gone fucking nuts, people. But in an effort to be fair, I'm going to give you a bit of a list of some gluten-free options to your alcohol. So this is something to pull up. This is actually a bunch. There's a mob out there who actually market a complete gluten-free alcohol list. You can buy it for, you know, $15, $20 American, whatever the fuck. So I'm going to go through some of their recommended products if you want to go gluten-free, or if you do have that disease, if you do have celiac disease, please, I'm not aiming this at you. I understand. In fact, Mr. JD, his own son, suffers from it. He's completely gluten intolerant. I do get it is a legitimate concern for some people. I'm just saying that for the rest of you fucking idiots, pull your goddamn head. But anyway, if you want to go gluten-free, fuck it, it's your body, you do what you fucking want, I don't care. If you do happen to be gluten-free or you want to go gluten-free, I'm gonna rattle off some more common fucking, well, not so common, beers and spirits that you might want to try. So here's some brands that are gluten-free beers. We've got Against the Grain, we've got Bard's Beer, Billabong Brewing, Estrella Damdura, Glutenberg, Green's Gluten-Free Beer, Hambleton Ales, Lambsbrow by Newmachter, New Grist, New Planet Beer, Omission Beer, but it's got a little bit of gluten, so if you do have celiac disease, stay the fuck away from it. Red Bidge Beer, Schnitzerbrau, Sprex's Gluten-Free Beer, St. Peter's, and Tuma Kuko, to name a few. If you're into the hard cider, if you like a bit of hard cider, Ace Pear Cider, Angry Orchard, Blue Mountain Cider Company, Blackthorn Cider, Bulmer's Hard Cider, Crispin Cider, Gay Mare Cider Company, Harpoon Craft Cider, Lazy Jack Cider, Magnar's Cider, you know, Original Sin Hard Cider, Strongbow, Stella Artois Apple and Pear Hard Ciders, Woodchuck, Woodpecker Cider, Smith & Forge Hard Cider, just to name a few. As you can see, there's obviously a lot more fucking gluten-free ciders because it's basically fermented fruit. God damn it. Now, Stoli may be the first certified gluten-free vodka that's coming out this month, but of course there is a lot of fucking different vodkas that are gluten-free, and you can tell that they're gluten-free and have been fucking maybe not certified gluten-free and a la fucking certified organic, but you're going to be safe if you want to enjoy these vodkas. So, in alphabetical order, we have Blue Ice Vodka, Boyd and Blair, Cayman Blue, Choppin' Polish Vodka, Ciroc, Devotion Vodka, Divine, Famous Vodka, Fleischmann's Vodka, Chrome Vodka. What else we got here? We got New Amsterdam, Ocean Vodka, RWB Vodka, Smirnoff Vodka, for fuck's sake, Tito's, Three Olives, Teton Glacier, UV, and Viking Fjord. That's just to name a few. That's just a quick few off the top of my fucking head. Tequila, 1519 Tequila, 1800 Tequila, Cabo Wabo, Don Julio Tequila, Juanitos, Jose Cavera, Patron, Suaza, rum. Let's go. We've got Bacardi, but only the Gold Superior 151 and the flavored Bacardi's, anything other than the base Bacardi. Appleton Estate, Jamaica Rum, Bayou Rum, Bundaberg Rum, Captain Morgan Rum, Cruisin' Rum, Mount Gay Rum. Pretty much the main fucking brands of rum you're going to find in any goddamn pub is going to be gluten-free. It's basically sugar cane, for fuck's sake. If you're looking for more, Bailey's Irish Cream, if you just want to go gluten-free, it's got a little bit of gluten, so don't drink it with celiac disease, of course. Ouzo Brandy, Contrao, fucking Cold River Gin, Fireball Whiskey, Hendrick's Gin, Hennessy, Jack Daniels, Jägermeister, Jameson, Johnny Walker, Kahlua, Malibu, Midori. The list goes fucking on and on. Fucking Sambuca, Wild Turkey, all these things are gluten-free. Why the fuck is this a news story? Why the fuck does anybody care? God damn! Dan needs to go back to a Zen state. Okay, so let's move on from fucking Stolly and their bullshit catering towards the fucking hipsters and the yuppies and the, oh, I'm gluten-free, thank you. Like I said, once again, if you do have celiac disease or you have a genuine allergy to the gluten protein, by all means, please do not think I'm taking a piss out of you. Understand. It's these other fucktards that I've got a goddamn problem with. So, on the note of the spirits while we're here, we've covered this a couple of times, but it's always nice to get a bit of a reminder about what the actual difference between whiskey, bourbon, and rum is. Now, have you ever wondered what the difference between all these dark liquors are? I mean, they're basically all the same fucking thing. They're all basically whiskey. So, I found this great article over at the Reserve blog. Now, they've decided to break it all down for us. So, why whiskey itself, you know, whiskey with an E, sometimes without the E. Who should we think for the different spellings of this popular spirit as we've gone into geography? Now, whiskey with an E is produced in the States or anywhere else. Whiskey itself is that is specifically made in Ireland. Now, this distilled alcoholic beverage is made from fermented grain mash, barley, corn, rye, or wheat. It's typically aged in charred white oak cask, giving it a distinctive brown color. Now, whiskey is the biggest broad category of liquor and can have lots of differences in color, taste, and smell, and is basically any brown liquor that you fucking drink is some form of whiskey. Once again, if you're going to drink whiskey, I mean, you can drink it fucking any way you bloody well want. Preferably not with fucking Coke, because that just makes you douche. Scotch. Now, Scotch is whiskey, spelt without the E. It's got to be produced in Scotland. It's the only way you can get Scotch. It's got to be from Scotland. If it's Australian Scotch, American Scotch, fucking Japanese, there's no such fucking thing. It's just whiskey at that point. Now, Scotch is made mostly from malted barley and aged in oak barrels for at least 3 years. Now, actually, that's bullshit. It's at least 4 years. The number following the name on a bottle of Scotch generally tells you how long it was aged. Duh. Like Macallan's 25. Now, some Scotch can taste a lot like bourbon, but it's malted with peat. It's got a very earthy fucking taste, very downer, very, very smoky taste. For this reason, it's not for everybody, but for others, especially if you've ever tried a really nice single malt, it's one of the best there. I mean, it's something you, a couple drops of water, a bit of ice, ah, mwah, bellissimo. Now, you know, but once again, you can fucking drink it however you want. So, you know, I'm not here to fucking judge, despite what you've heard for the last 20 minutes or so. Now, bourbon. Bourbon Its name comes from an area known as Old Bourbon in Kentucky. Now, to be a proper bourbon, it has to be made in fucking Kentucky, a Kentucky goddamn bourbon. Now, it is originally a whiskey. The main difference here is it's distilled from corn. Now, for a whiskey to be considered a bourbon, the grain mash must be at least 51% corn. On top of that, by law, the mixture must be stored in charred oak barrels and cannot contain any additives. So there you go. And just as a personal preference, I'm telling you right now, anything aged over 8 years is not a very good fucking bourbon. So age statement is not really all that important with bourbon in and of itself, although single cask bourbon is very, very nice. You can drink bourbon any fucking way you want. It doesn't really matter. You can mix it with soft drink, you can mix it with Coke, you can drink it by itself, you can fucking put it in a cocktail, you can make an all-spice flavoured ghost chili, lemon, honey. Fuck, anything you bloody well want, you can mix with bourbon. Let's see, what else we got here? We got rye. Now, rye is one of these funny ones. Now, you can get a rye bourbon, a bourbon rye, or a rye whiskey, or a rye scotch. Now, rye is a grass in the sort of closely related to wheat, but it's more closely related to barley. Now, rye whiskey can refer either to American whiskey, which is distilled from at least 51% rye and aged 2 years or more, or Canadian whiskey, which may or may not actually include any rye in its production process. That's just what they call it. Now, it's full in body and spice. Rye, which has been playing second fiddle to its closest cousin, bourbon, ever since the US corn production increased in the decades following Prohibition, has been making a bit of a comeback in the last couple of years. And I'm telling you right now, rye also makes a very good fucking vodka. If you've ever had a rye vodka, it is beautiful. It is fucking smooth as hell. I'm not going to go on to tasting notes. That's the best bit about drinking. You can go find this shit out for your goddamn self. Now, bourbon and beer regulations have been changed under a new law in Kentucky to stick with this dark spirit thing. Kentucky legislators have passed a bill revising alcohol regulations in a move that is expected to encourage expansion in the state's distilling and brewing industries. Senate Bill 11, first introduced the 6th of January this year, passed the House on last Tuesday with a vote of 31-6 and has since been sent on to the Governor, Matt Bevin. This is indeed a happy hour. This has been a long time coming, said Eric Gregory, president of the Kentucky Distillers Association. We've been talking about this for several years, but with the increased tourism and skyrocketing success of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, this is something we desperately needed for our visitors and to compete with other states. Now, what is this fucking bill, you say? I hear you. I don't know either. We're discovering this together for the first time. Now, the bill apparently encompasses a wide range of regulation changes for Kentucky distilleries, breweries, and wineries. Here are the main aspects. Distilleries will now be able to sell alcohol by the glass in addition to giving customers samples and selling bottles of their brands. This means that distilleries can serve full drinks in tasting rooms and offer a variety of classes. Gregory said that a lot of distilleries want to do it from an educational standpoint. They've got no interest in becoming bars. Some have always wanted to have programs to teach you how to make the perfect old-fashioned or culinary classes to pair bourbon with dishes. It's another education option open to them while visitors are out there. Pardon me. Now, currently distilleries are limited to serving alcohol in 1 ounce samples. That's your typical shot glass, people. Under the bill, distilleries will now be able to increase their sample sizes to 1 3/4 ounces, which is, 50 mil. Now, this will allow visitors to taste several different liquors if they wish. Along with the increase, the Kentucky Distillers Association has agreed to a mandate that requires every employee who sells or serves alcohol to undergo training conducted by the Kentucky Department of Alcoholic Beverages Control, an RSA, as they call it here in Australia, Responsible Service of Alcohol. Now, this bill also increases the number of bottles distilleries can sell per customer. The number will move from 4 750ml bottles to 6 750ml bottles, which is absolutely fucking cool because there's nothing quite like getting it straight from the fucking brewery. I'm sorry, but there isn't. Another key point is as distilleries continue to spread out statewide, the bill will give businesses more incentive to consider dry counties by allowing them to conduct wet-dry votes by precinct. Instead of holding a vote for the entire county, the law will be changed to a trial basis for 3 years, but it could help continue the state growth in economic development. This is basically the state saying that you're a distillery in the US, why aren't you coming to Kentucky? Because we have those tools now, says Gregory. We have the ability to help you succeed in a place where bourbon was born. The brewery barrel increase is another really, really great point. And this is more to do with the craft beer. Now, what this will do is increase the maximum number of barrels that microbreweries can produce before losing their craft title, allowing them an easier path to increasing production, says John King, president of the Kentucky Guild of Brewers. Currently, breweries that produce more than 25,000 barrels of beer per year cannot own a taproom and production facility under state law. This new bill will increase the number to 50,000 barrels per year, giving breweries more room to grow before they have to split up their operations. We had to look ahead and be on it, Mr. King said, mentioning that three breweries that have built or are building production facilities will probably be back there next year. Now, while breweries will still have to go through a distributor to participate in large festivals such as the Tailspin Ale Fest, State Bill 11 will allow them to set up sales at small events like farmers markets without having to take that extra step. Now, someone like Great Flood can go across the street to a farmers market and sell their own beer without having to go through a distributor. It gives small breweries an opportunity to go more places and get their names out there. I think that's about all the booze news I've got. That is all the booze news I've got this week. I just wanted to have a bit of a rant on a couple of those things. I didn't expect the rant on the gluten-free thing to quite progress as it did, but you know what? Fucking assholes do vex me. So that's our booze news for this week. One more important bit of new booze news, and this is only really relevant to my Australian listeners, and that is there is going to be a new tax increase on the sale of alcohol this year. Now, for those who do not know, in Australia, our spirits get taxed quite fucking heavily. It's the reason why we tend to get more expensive bottles at a lesser ABV or standard drinks per bottle. It's because we get taxed in the spirits, at least, by the amount of alcohol by volume. Traditionally, wine has been exempt from this law. For some fucked out reason, God only knows why, because lawyers like wine, apparently. This is all set to change this year. What they're trying to do is bring in a new tax that sets a standard tax rate across all forms of alcohol, and it's going to be done by the standard drink per container, not by the fucking strength itself. So more news as that's incoming, because I haven't really looked at the literature just yet, but that's coming next episode. Now, bit of beard news. Let's do a bit of beard news. We haven't done beard news for a while. Now, when I say beard news, it's a bit of an over-exaggeration. For better or for worse, it seems to be that we are finally starting to hit that downswing in the cyclical sort of nature of beard versus clean-shaven men. And I'm not scared of it. Like I said, I think it's good. I think we might finally be able to drop some of the fucking drop kicks and the hipsters and the fucking weird-ass fucking trend followers and actually just get back to being a bearded brotherhood, if you will, and without all the fucking confusion. And I think there's a couple of things in this article that I'm going to read that I think really sums up why it's peak beard is nothing to be scared of. So this article is called "Why Bearded Men Make the Best Boyfriends." It's written by Gigi Angle from "Love Is a Motherfucker." So this is her. I'm just going to read it verbatim because I don't even know how to fucking couch this without reading it verbatim. So here we fucking go. Fact. A man who can grow a beard is fucking hot. I didn't make that up. It's just a fact of nature. Everybody knows this. I'm talking about real ass full beard, by the way. Not some puby bullshit beard. If your beard is patchy, this is not for you. I'm sorry, but nobody's fooled. I feel like so many grow beards because they think women want them to grow beards. We do want you to grow a beard. You're right. But only if you can grow a beard. For all you pubetastic beards out there, you do not have the genetic gift, so just move on. It's fine. Anyway, men with beards are hotter than everybody else. Sorry, guys. Have you ever gone beard, my lady friend? Well, you just wait, because the minute you do, you are never going back. Once you go beard, you don't go back. Let Auntie Gigi take you on a little road of self-discovery, chickens. Number one. Anything short of beard rash feels like a waste of time. When you make out with a man with a beard, you will sometimes get a beard rash. What the fuck else did you think was going to happen when your soft, dainty-ass girl skin touches his rough-faced tresses? It's annoying at first because your skin gets irritated, and nobody wants that. But Any girl with a lusty affection for bearded men will tell you it starts to become a non-negotiable necessity. Kissing somebody without a beard feels gross. It's like kissing a baby. Sick. Number two, he looks good in literally everything. The beard is seriously the ultimate accessory. He looks hot as fucking jeans and a t-shirt. Bonus if he gets guns. And he looks delicious in a suit. Bearded guys, man, they are some gems. A guy with a smooth face needs to dress up to look sexy. A man with a beard can walk around in sweats and be totally fuckable. Ugh, she dies. The jealous looks you get from other women are empowering. Now, this swings both ways, sweetheart, I've got to tell you. If you have a hot piece of bearded man candy on your arm, you can bet your ass other girls are going to be jealous, and the jealous looks won't be awkward at all. That will be empowering because the sexiest piece of meat is with you. There is something super intriguing about a female who totes around with a guy with a beard. She's no girl. She's all woman. She's no nonsense and no time for fuckboy tomfoolery. No thank you, sir. Number four, your mum does not like his beard. Your mum is going to hate your boyfriend's beard. Her own mum asked him if she shaved it for her as a Christmas present. She don't know why, but her hatred of his facial hair is disturbingly satisfying for me. I'm sorry, I'm going to switch into the second person. Okay, it's fucking too disturbing trying to read this from the first person. But it's like the ultimate jab of parental control, you know? He's a beautiful man inside and out, but she's still got to have that mum and dad don't approve vibe that made her go out with the bad boys in high school. She know it's sick, but fuck it. Number five, he is the best alarm clock. Look, don't even knock it till you try it. Forget needing an alarm clock when you have a tasty man with a beard to wake you up with scratchy tenderness in the morning. Being gently needled from your slumber by a beard between your shoulder blades is a damn game changer. Number six, if he can grow a strong beard, he probably has strong sperm. Now, this is proven fucking scientifically, by the way. Medical science! In ancient times, beards were seen as a sign of a man's virility, meaning he could impregnate the shit out of you. Be still her lady loins. if he has a beard, he's going to produce strong offspring. Apparently, the females want to get up all in that shit because of, you know, biology. Women are genetically inclined to pursue a mate who they think will be a good father of their wee babies. And if a guy's got a beard, that's a pretty good in fucking story. Number seven, other guys will not mess with him. Your bae is not a big guy, he's an average height and build, but that beard puts him heads above the rest. And while Gigi's no damsel in distress, she doesn't mind having a boyfriend that the other dudes don't ever want to mess with. Something about the ability to grow a beard both intimidates other men and causes them to look up to another man. It's all tied up into, you know, daddy stuff. You look towards a bearded man and you can't help but get all fucking paternal about shit. And having a beard, you tend to have the opposite thing when you send a clean-shaven man. You just sort of want to tap him on the shoulder. It's all right, mate. It's okay. Just grow a beard and become a man. And finally, she goes, he is just so fucking manly. Now, she knows this one is a given, and I've got to say, it's not necessarily a given. You see, all these fucking... This goes back to the hipster fucking argument. I'm sorry, Auntie Gigi. Just because he's got a beard and likes to carry on an axe and wears flannel doesn't mean he can change a fucking tire, let alone be super manly. So that's that highly disturbing list that I should have probably read through before I fucking started reading it on the air, so to speak. But fuck it. Hopefully my uncomfortableness makes you happy. So Adele came out this last month and has admitted that she's got a beard. And she's even named it. So when Adele was pregnant with her son, who's now 3.5, she grew a beard, with all the hormones and stuff. Now, she told the Mirror UK that she only cropped it last night at the time of writing of the article, which was a couple of days ago from time of recording. It's actually true, she goes. I'm not telling a joke. I actually have a beard, and I'm proud of it. I call it Larry. Now, the singer credits her high testosterone levels during pregnancy, and her self-diagnosis doesn't seem to be too far off, according to Alyssa Dweck, MD, and OBGYN and clinical assistant professor at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Hair growth or hirsutism in pregnancy is due usually to hormonal fluctuations, an increase in secretion of male hormones or androgens from the ovaries and placenta. Good news for women who want a baby without a beard. Any excess hair that grows on the face, chest, abdomen, or arms, usually towards the end of the second trimester when the hormone-secreting placenta really starts to take shape, is usually temporary. It typically goes away on its own within 6 months of giving birth. By that point, any hair loss from the head or even more annoying side effects that can affect new mums in the 3 months following pregnancy should resolve itself as well. That said, Dr. Dweck warns that excessive hair growth in odd places can be a permanent condition among some women, like Adele, whose beard has been growing strong for more than 3 years. And it's not always related to pregnancy, see polycystic ovary syndrome, which is why it's worth getting checked out by a physician or endocrinologist if hair growth persists long after pregnancy or occurs when there is no baby in tow. Now, while the condition can be hereditary, there is also many other conditions besides pregnancy that can mess with your hormones and trigger hair growth. So there you go. Adele's got a beard. Good on you, Adele. And Larry, I fucking love the name. Larry the Beard. And finally, my last sort of fun, lighthearted, beard hard story, which after some fucking heavy booze rants, I think is fucking appropriate. A teacher who looks completely different after shaving off his beard for a bet films a hilarious moment his own mother fails to recognize him in a supermarket. So, the man, Dan Black, age 27, is a teacher in the UK who has grown his facial hair for 2 years but agreed with his girlfriend, Alicia Dutch, that if she beat him to the Bath Half Marathon on March 13th, he would shave it all off. When he was pipped to the finish line, Dan kept his side of the bargain and went clean shaven, becoming completely unrecognisable in the process, which will fucking happen. Now, in fact, he looks so staggeringly altered that he managed to stand next to his mother in Sainsbury's without her realising who the stranger next to her was. Now, this clip has been posted online. I mean, you should go check it out because it is fucking hilarious. This poor woman has not only got no fucking clue who the fuck this dude is, she starts getting a little bit worried because she hadn't seen Dan since she shaved it off. Now, the clip, you can see her, he's standing right next to her, and I mean, at one point, he deliberately reaches across from her to take something off the shelf, and she, like, backed right the fuck up with no clue that this dude was her own fucking son. When Ali moved down the aisle, Dan followed her, and it wasn't until his girlfriend could be heard laughing as she filmed it that the mother turned around and realized who it was. You can hear her. She screams, "Fucking hell, I thought you were a weirdo. I was running away from you." Oh, God damn, man. It is so funny. Now, Dan told the Lad Bible he wanted to get a reaction out of his mostly chilled out mum. He goes, "I got closer, picking things up right in front of her to see if I'd get a reaction. She carried on tolerating me and actually made eye contact with me as she tried to escape. He was shocked that his mother couldn't recognize him." But Dan swears to us, he's not happy with his own drastic look, and he's planning to regrow his beard as soon as he can, especially seeing as he found out that his girlfriend doesn't like the clean shaven look. Now, actually, I do have one more story. We're going to burn through this really fucking quick. Now, I think last year we looked at some great mustaches in movies, and I happened to come across this other list. I like my list, I do. 20 undeniably awesome beards in movies. So there's 20 beards that they mentioned here. Now, this is only the tip of the iceberg because there is so many great beards out there. And I mean, I think most of these ones in this list are actually real beards, not the, you know, yak nut hair that The Rock was sporting in Hercules. So first on the list is Kevin Smith in just about every single fucking movie he's in. Kevin Smith has been a bearded man for most of his fucking career. And, you know, it's a well-groomed, perfectly normal beard. Hart Bochner in Die Hard, Sylvester Stallone in Nighthawk, Sean Connery in Life. Zach Galifianakis has had an amazing beard right up until he fucking shaved it off. George Clooney in Syriana, Viggo Mortensen in The Road, Lou Ferrigno in Hercules. In fucking Hercules, you can't make a list, any list. I've got a theory. Any fucking list about any fucking thing to do with movies is going to have Hercules in some way, shape or form turn up there somehow. I fucking swear it's true. Pat Roach in Willow, and also in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Ian McKellen and the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which of course was a fake beard, but anyway. Tom Hanks in Castaway. Terrence Stamp and Jack O'Halloran in Superman 1 and 2. "Kneel before me, you bastard." Bill Murray in The Life Aquatic with Steven Zissou. Jack Black in Orange County. Ewan McGregor in Revenge of the Sith. Now, fucking funny story with Revenge of the Sith especially. You can tell when they've finished filming because and they've had to go back and reshoot because he sported his own beard for most of it, but the reshoots, he shaved it all off, and you can see the CGI beard that they've had to put in, which is just fucking horrible. And you can't mention Star Wars without, of course, the late, great Sir Alec Guinness as old Obi-Wan Kenobi. And while we're on the track of Star Wars and their stars, Harrison Ford in The Fugitive had a great beard, and Brad Pitt in Legends of the Fall. And then, of course, you've got Old Blue, Patrick Crenshaw in Old School, and, of course, Chong in fucking everything. Feel free to fucking shout, hit me up on Twitter if you think there's anything in this list that needs to be deserved. I will one day get around, I think, to compiling the list to end all lists of facial hair in fucking movies, because fucking why not? There's so many lists out there. Oh, I wouldn't mind doing my own. So if there's a list, anything you think that should be included in a best beard list, by all means, fucking let me know. I'd love to get your feedback. Now, on the note of fucking Twitter, I got the funniest fucking tweet I've gotten in a long time. It's time for a fucking shout out, I think. I've been on Night Shift for the first time in about 4.5 fucking years this last couple of weeks. And cruised into work one day, fucking logged onto Twitter. And I got this fucking tweet that damn near made me fall out of my chair at 4:30 in the fucking morning. So Brendan King at Desert Chiro 716. Tweeted, near wrecked, pissed myself, received a finger or two on my way into class listening to the Drunken Beersman podcast this morning. I fucking pissed myself. Brendan, if you're listening, mate, thank you so much for making my fucking morning. So hard to be getting up when I'm normally going to bed, going into work. I'm normally a morning person, but then there's limits to that. Like I said, I'm normally fucking awake at this time. Well, normally going to bed at this time. And your tweet, it made my fucking day. I had a grin from asshole to fucking breakfast all fucking day, man. So thank you very much for your wonderful tweet. If you are on the Twitter, go give him a follow. Why not? Desert Chiro 716. Or is that Desert Chiro 716? I can never fucking tell. What can I say? Also need to give a shout out to Scott at the Beardcaster. Now, he's 8 episodes in at the moment, man. It's a brand new podcast. I talked about it last week or last episode. I'm going to talk about it again. By all means, go give the guy a listen. He's going leaps and fucking bounds. He's got some great guests on there. He supports some great, great causes. It's a really good listen to. It doesn't go for too long like this sometimes does. Like, I don't know, right now, for instance, I think this is the longest episode I've recorded in ages. And he was also very, very fucking kind enough to actually fucking feature yours truly with my Grizzly Jack fucking review that I did last week. And on that note, a little update there. I think he's almost done. I checked a couple of days ago and he was 12,000 of the 15 he needed. It was still about 20 fucking days to go. But by all means, go. The more money you can give this guy, the more he's got, the more he can do with it. I mean, they are some great fucking products. But thank you very, very much, Scott, from The Beardcaster. Find him at www.thebeardcaster.com. And if you do, you will find this article. Now, this is one of the first things he did for his website, and in fact was part of the genesis of the Beardcaster podcast itself. So this is coming out from December 1st last year, and it's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek look at the bearded men in ufology. So I'm going to read it all to you straight out, flat again. I've read it a couple of times. I'm not going to get awkward reading this, and it was funny. I mean, I admit, when I first read this, I'm like, oh, what the fuck is going on here? But the more I read, the bigger the smile, and then started little giggles. By the end of it, I was well pleased and chuffed. Actually, had a 2 smoke break instead of a 1 smoke break, but fucking who cares? So my name is Scott Sakura. Fuck, sorry, dude. And I'm a certified ufologist. I have spent many years in research and experimentation in the growing field and many certificates verifying my expertise and knowledge in ufology. I have received many awards and accolades for the time and effort I have put my work into regarding UFOs. I am but one of many researchers trying to give others a better understanding of what we all face every day and the struggles that lie upon us in this highly scrutinized field. Every day we are looked at as weird or freaks and are being constantly judged by others because of what we believe. Being a UFO researcher or an unshaven follicle observer, I experience the world in a different light. We often get confused with those who are doing research on unidentified flying objects, and we're okay with that. We both are equally shunned by society as weird people who follow a belief in something that doesn't follow the norm. No Shave November was a good time to look at a few researchers and characters in the field who are crossover individuals. These men search for the unknown in the sky and adorned with magnificent facial hair. Being a believer in the extraterrestrial hypothesis, I have followed many of these men in their research for truth. I wanted to focus my attention towards a group of men who I look upon as visionaries in the field that can be controversial at times. Each individual shares a similar belief in the unknown and also has some unique facial hair growth. What can researchers' experiences, facial hair style say about them and their beliefs? Let's take a closer look at each of these must-knows in the field of ufology. The following is what my many years of studying unshaven follicle observing on all those who look into unidentified flying objects could possibly mean to the rest of the world. Raymond Stanford. What an experience this man has had over the decades of capturing images and researching some pretty terrific UFO cases. From his research in Socorro to his abduction investigation of Betty Anderson, this bearded man has given a lot to the field. Ray Fowler has that, been there, seen that, and done that, and has devoted his life to trying to find answers to the enigma that has baffled men since the late 40s. Ray's maintained this facial hairstyle for many years, which is a rather scholarly look, and the look achieved by a man who has seen it all, the look of a confident man. Keep up the good work, Mr. Stanford. You inspire me to be a silver fox. Greg Bishop, author and podcaster extraordinaire. Only a perfectly maintained goatee can be worn by an expertly astute man. Radio Mysterio is by far the fairest of all podcasts on the UFO enigma, providing thoughtful, sometimes comical insight into the excluded middle. Maybe the excluded middle is referring to Mr. Bishop's choice of facial prowess. His rated deciding to be exclusive to the right and left side of his face says a lot. A thoughtful salad of leafy belief and robust skepticism, a meal fit for one on a diet. A diet of intellectual awesomeness. Maybe Paul Benowitz really did discover something unusual in the 80s. Did the cover-up begin with Dottie and his misinformation, or did it begin when Mr. Bishop stopped shaving his chin? Greg Norrie. Sometimes style and class can be defined by the way a man wears a mustache. This coast-to-coast host could make the likes of Tom Selleck a believer. For many years, he and his luscious mustache have shared wonderful tales of the supernatural to many adoring fans. I speculate that it is possible his fuzzy-lipped caterpillar that may draw the true attention to this radio host. It has been said that he cares more for the entertainment side of what he does over what he believes is being portrayed by the guests when it comes to his show. I say this may be true. You can't look this good with a mustache this amazing and not want to give him a pat on the back. It comes natural for handsome men like this to be entertaining and sharp-looking to those who listen and those that really believe. Let us entertain this thought. George Norrie without a mustache? I say Norrie way. Travis Walton. One of the greatest known abduction cases in history happened to be belonging to this mustache logger. In the 1993 movie Fire in the Sky, it was a loose depiction of what happened to Travis in November of 1975. Other than the film company taking liberties and altering Travis Walton's experience by making his abduction seem like a horrifying experience, contrary to his description, they also cast D.B. Sweeney to play him. While Sweeney did a stellar job portraying Travis, they forgot the most important feature of Walton. His fucking mustache! Try having Sir Daniel Day-Lewis play the role of Abraham Lincoln and not having that iconic beard. Nobody believed he took playing that character seriously or that he believed in his role. Though I speculate that is true, I also wonder about when Travis was taken, if the aliens implanted him with one that was out of this world mustache. Richard Dolan. This fantastic author had me at hello. After Disclosure is one of my favourite books on the topic of extraterrestrial contact. His scruffy look has come and gone over the years, but seems to have become a staple of this historian. Does he play it safe or try to be unpredictable with his follic expression? Maybe he's trying to keep us on our toes, making us think that it is some conspiracy by having a breakaway civilization to deny Americans of razors. Many influential men through history have worn all types of facial hair. Maybe Richard Dolan saw something in Joseph Stalin's mustache to drive his studies in Cold War research. Isn't it ironic that no president who served in the Cold War had facial hair? Stanton T. Friedman. This may be the only thing I can say I do better than Mr. Freeman. Grow a massive beard. You would never catch me trying to be a nuclear physicist. Why would you expect Stanton to be an award-winning beard grower? Stanton has been called the godfather of ufology and has shown everyone the importance of good research and fact-checking. This man takes pride in keeping his facial hair perfectly maintained for the past few hundred decades, barely altering his custom style. Though I've never seen a Friedman ever pulled by someone in the bearding competition world, I would assume everyone would sit back and take that person very seriously, because he takes his beard very seriously. One of the most referenced researchers out there, the study of UFOs wouldn't be the same without this man. Without his beard, he would just be Stan Friedman, the nuclear physicist who is the end of UFOs. See how much it changes everything? Oh, fuck me. Giorgio Souglakos. Ancient Aliens, a hit show on the History Channel, wouldn't be where it was without this man's beard. Although it is light and airy, it is by far the most distinguishing characteristic of this intelligently animated researcher. All one needs to do is a Google search and you come up with fucking hundreds of fantastic memes made with this terrific facial hair at the forefront. His beard and mustache definitely give him a genuinely unique look that made him sort of the top of the ancient astronaut theorists most recognizable. Though his theories may seem out of this world and need some major consideration to get behind, I can definitely get behind this man's crazy facial hair. It is indeed out of this world. Now, the memes he's on about is, but it was aliens meme. It's fucking great. There's a lot of fun with that. Billy Meyer. How can you not like this man? He is full of tales of wonderful adventures and has a wonderful full beard. Billy has taken his fair share of photos to prove that the UFO phenomenon is real. The bearded man has shared many photos and tales of his UFO experiences in his homeland of Switzerland. A trim mustache involved in a full beard tells me, I have a story to tell, but I still want to look good telling it. The high cheek growth is a dead giveaway that this man wants to let it all go, but the perfectly trimmed mustache wants me to not believe. This is the tale of Billy Meyer, a man who has been reported to have hoaxed some of the most amazing photos. My question is, how can we trust a man who can't commit 100% to the creation of his amazing full beard? Alan J. Hynek. Starting as a skeptic, becoming one of those who fought for the cause, J. Alan Hynek has an amazing style to the forefront of ufology. Coming up with the classifications of contact, this carefully constructed facial-haired astronomer defined what a close encounter is. With a quick appearance in close encounters of the third kind, this man's stature and beard come to the forefront of credibility and knowledge of this subject. Swamp gas couldn't stop this man from finding the real truth out there. Thank you to J. Alan Hynek for being one of the first researchers to discover the real truth. The truth that a classic man needs a classic facial hairstyle to be taken seriously in the hunt for UFOs. Stan Romanek. What is hidden underneath this man's perfectly shaped goatee? Is it the truth about the videos he has captured in the past, or the stories he has shared? Sure, they all sound outlandish and out of this world, but many people still stand behind this man and his stories. Currently, Stan has disappeared from the abduction forefront due to an invasion by the FBI and confiscation of his computers for alleged wrongdoings. Although many still stick by his side and support his stories and videos, I believe there is more to this man. Precision razor technique is put into place for this style. Maybe the precision is to only cover a portion of the truth. And finally, Don Schmidt. This Roswell researcher goes over with a classic style. Nicely trimmed and shaped mustache and goatee with a light beard combo. This man has kept this perfectly coiffed look for many years. Why not stick with what works? One of the foremost experts in the Roswell incident of 1947, Don has remained steadfast in his facial hairstyle for decades, helping him become a 5-time best-selling author. The influence of taking the time to look good can influence a person's professional career. Recent controversy, however, hasn't changed his feelings on his nicely maintained look. Sticking with the tried and true keeps this man heading from anything but perfection. Like I said, man, that's something fucking else to read. Like I said, you start reading, you're like, fuck, here we go. What are we dealing with here? What are we dealing with? And it's just a really good tongue-in-cheek look. Scott's got a real talent for writing very humorous little stories like this, and fucking whether you believe in UFOs or not, it's still worth reading. So go find that over at thebeardcaster.com. Now, I do believe that's about all I've got time for tonight. I've kept it longer than what I normally do. So, you know, you can find me on the social medias at The Drunkle Dan. You can find us at thedrunkenbeardsman.com. You can send us an email, mailbag@thedrunkenbeardsman.com. And please, by all means, come check out my new podcast, The Drunken Book Nerd, which you'll be able to find on iTunes within, by the time this is posted, actually. So go check it out. If you like books or you wanna get into books, it's definitely worth having a look. So my name's Drunkle Dan on the same drunk channel on the same bearded time. Stay bearded and beautiful, people. Having a good time is not my cup of tea. No, I don't care for much at all, but there is one thing that I'm all for. I don't like Queen. Powderfinger, not my kind of scene. A tropical sunset, a fine red wine. Having sex, it's all just a waste of my time. I don't like you or anyone, but there is one thing that turns me on. I like beards. Beards are great, they look so nice on your face. I've got to make this crystal clear. I like beards. Oh! This has been a production of R vs R Media. The Drunken Beardsman would like to take this moment to remind you that the Drunken Beardsman promote responsible drinking in moderation. If at any time you feel that we do not promote this, by all means, reach out to us, mailbag@thedrunkenbeardsman.com. Theme song has been thankfully provided by The Beards. You can find them at www.thebeards.com.au. And remember, necking is something you do with your lips, not with a bottle of booze. I don't like this song, I don't like it here. Don't like guitar, I don't like bass. I don't like the look of your face. Don't like to rock, I don't like to roll. Don't like it too hot, don't like it too cold. I don't like water, don't like food. Don't like to go out, don't like to stay in. I don't really like anything. There's just one reason why I'm here. Oh!